Sahanavavatu Sahanabhunaktu Sahavilyankaravavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastamavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
In actuality, pure consciousness, Purusha, is subject neither to bondage nor to liberation, because he is never really in bondage. The concept of bondage and liberation, pain and suffering, are the result of ignorance or false understanding. Prakriti binds herself with the rope of her own manifestations, and when Purusha recognizes her as distinct from him, she liberates herself. As has previously been stated, there are eight attributes of Mahat, or Buddhi, intellect, which is the prime evolute of Prakriti. So he's saying here is because the soul, technically speaking, isn't actually bound. He just thinks he is. That's why he's conditioned. He's not, but practically, he is in bondage because of this consciousness. But technically, the soul is always pure, so he is never any manifestation of this world. So it doesn't actually come to be like that. But because the element of bondage is there, now they're putting it on that the material energy is bound with her own manifestation. But the thing is she's always working under the Supreme Lord, so she's free also. Right? So the it's only an illusion that one is, bound. But because of that illusion, you are bound. You're bound by that illusion. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So, in other words, they're putting it that the material energy itself, that is binding itself. And when the soul sees oneself as different, then she unbinds herself. But then this means that she's very conscious and all that there. But at the same time, they say she's unconscious. So they do recognize in observing the workings of material energy that there's simultaneously a conscious and unconscious element. That the matter itself is unconscious. So that's what we're dealing with. But at the same time, the personality of the material energy is conscious. Right? Does that make sense? So we can see here basically the deity comes out to be the material energy. So it's a kind of materialism, basically. But it ends up impersonalism. So it's a mix between the two. Because generally, in the materialistic, you have the ones that deal with karma, they end up, you know, somehow or another connected with the material energy. And those that liberate you from the material energy, they don't necessarily see her in a good light. But as we see here, then they can have both happening. So it's all varieties. Does that make sense? It means in material consciousness you have karma and you have jnana. So karma means you do good work, you get good result, you enjoy the material energy. Jnana means you can't get any happiness out of the material energy, so the point is to do work, good work, but from the platform of naishkarmya, without desiring result, and seeing yourself as free from the bondage of the material energy, no connection with it, then that will free you from the material, contamination, and in that freed state, you will basically cease to exist. You know, great prospects. So, but here we see is then you can get both. Is that some in the impersonalists many times get very much into and propagate a lot of good karma. Good work, good nice, welfare, being good to everyone. You know, you're Buddhists and so many other, they do exactly this. But at the same time, you can also have something that's based in karma and it still be impersonal. Because ultimately it has to be impersonal, because the maximum they can get without accepting the Lord as He is the Brahman platform. That's the maximum you can get up to. Right? Because Paramatma means you're accepting karma, you're accepting His control of it. So in your contemporary monotheistic, they don't accept that. He's not in control, someone else is in control. It's just a matter of depending upon, you know, the time and place, whether they believe that, you know, who is in control. Does that make sense? Who is this Gnostic deity that they consider is in control? Like that.
The Sankhya, they seem to appreciate very much more of goodness as being, you know, kind of safe and...
It's illuminating.
Yeah. So is the same position like the Mayavadi on this point, or the Mayavadi would be more, you know, anti all of the treatments?
No. Mode of goodness is standard because, see, they don't know about pure goodness. Because pure goodness means devotional service. You can't have pure goodness without devotional service, because even you are situated in goodness, even you're on the Brahman platform, what's your consciousness? What are you still left with? Is the consciousness pure or not? You still have the Purusha Bhav. Therefore, in here, they're describing the Jiva as Purusha. Right? But they're taking the deity of the material world. Like that. So you can see in here all kinds of basis for these various philosophies of you know, karmic materialism, that they worship, you know, Mother Nature and see her in a good light and see her, you know, like here is saying as a mother. Then some of them, they take her as a combination between the mother, the wife, the daughter, you know, or anything that's good aspects of feminine nature. So then, but that, there it's imagined. Here they say it's real. You know, so there's just differences on how much they can accommodate or not, how they put it together or not. So they're only taking elements out of here. Does that make sense? You have a very elaborate recipe, and you're not so expert at cooking. So let's say it has 20 ingredients, but in you kind of like dealing with it or tasting it or looking at it, you can only pick out 8. Right? So therefore, you cook that and you say it's the same preparation. In one sense, it kind of is, but in another sense, it's not, because the subtleties aren't there. So the same way as all other philosophies other than the six systems, they're all based on these. Right? And even these are based on real religion, but it's not complete. So real religion, or Sanatana Dharma, is the basis of everything. Then the six systems that get based on that, though they leave something out, and therefore in its incompleteness, it actually becomes, you know, atheistic. Right? Even though they may accept God and everything like that. That's what we're coming up to now. Then you have those that are non-Vedic. They are still based on the actual principles of Sanatana Dharma, but they've been filtered through these six systems and then even farther away. So they're even a step further away than the six systems. But the point is that the actual religion is the basis of any religion. Like that, because you can't get away from that. That is religion. Anything else is actually not religion. Does that make sense? You know, like the kids going down the street with the tire off the car and a stick and whacking it and running along. And in his own mind, he may be driving down the street. Right? But is he driving down the street? No. But what he has, the concept of that a car goes down the street, you can drive in it, and he does have a piece of the car. So that's your modern philosophies and religion. They have pieces of it. They think they're doing the same thing, but it's not complete. So that's the difference in what we're presenting. All other systems basically can't accommodate anybody else. It's that their system, everything else is different, that's mode of passion. Right? Mode of goodness, you understand, actually everything is the same. It's just various aspects of it. You know what I'm saying? You know, you have an adult that's a human being. You have a child, are they also a human being? But so many of the characteristics of an adult they don't have. So now do we classify them not as a human being? No, they're still classified, but they're just there, a small one. You know what I'm saying? More towards the missing link. Right? And as they grow, then supposedly, then they are supposed to bridge that gap instead of turning into, you know, silverback gorillas. You know? Does that make sense? But this personal element means she's doing all this for the jiva, simply because the jiva wants to understand who he is. So his need to understand who he is, then having that understanding, he interacts with Prakriti. She manifests all this as a kind mother, binds herself in this illusion, though he's not, but he identifies with it. Because he's identifying with it, right? In other words, by reflectionism, he is identifying with the Mahat. As it means the Buddhi, as it's because it's the closest to the soul, so it gets its consciousness from the soul, but it's also reflected back on the soul, and so he sees himself as that. But since he's not bound, that means the modes of nature, the actions done, the forms done here are bound by the modes. You know what I'm saying? In other words, that means that all the modes are connected to each other, so they're not independent of each other. So him identifying with that, he actually then becomes, in this way, practically speaking, bound by the modes. But the modes actually are the material energy. She is the modes. So we say here, she's bound, but it's not actually she is bound. That's just her manifestation. Because her, in this sense, liberating herself means she goes back to Prakriti, or the Pradhan. Does that make sense? So we reflect there and then you see. You know what I'm saying? It'd just be like you look in the mirror, and in the mirror then you see your face, but then somebody's put a rope around your face there. So then you think, oh, I'm tied up. So because you identify with the mirror, then practically you are tied up, because you'll act as one tied up. So when you understand you're not tied up, you're not. The fun part about it, it's that simple. That's why the gopis in a moment can just be attracted by Krishna. That's all it takes. It only takes a moment. 1/11th of a second is all it takes to come to the platform of basically pure unalloyed devotional service. You know, and if that's there, then liberation is, you know, easier. You understand? That's not a big deal. It just comes as a side, you know. You order, you know, your side of fries. You do get ketchup with it. You know what I'm saying? It just comes along with it. It's not like it's a separate endeavor. You know what I'm saying? As previously has been stated, there are 8 attributes of Mahat. Or buddhi, the intellect, which is the prime evolute of Prakriti. These 8 are attachment and detachment, vice and virtue, non-meritorious and meritorious action, ignorance and knowledge. Right? So they're all the pairs of duality. You know, based on, attachment, detachment, vice and virtue, so it's good, non-meritorious, meritorious, ignorance and knowledge. Prakriti binds herself with the first 7 attributes and liberates herself with the 8. Right? Because in here, according to this, as she is unconscious, right, then that means as long as the living entity is working in ignorance, then she is manifest and therefore bound by the modes that are herself. But as soon as he acts in knowledge, then she is also freed from that because he doesn't identify with it, so therefore she's not involved. You understand?
Well, what would be the difference between vice and virtue and non-meritorious and meritorious action?
Vice and virtue is more, you know, your interest. It means you have your attachment and detachment. Vice and virtue are going to be the way you're going to, your attraction and that to it. It's going to be good or bad. Then meritorious, non-meritorious. Just like, let's say, the dacoit comes into the deity room and steals from the deities. Okay, so that's a non-meritorious act. Right? And his virtue, there's no virtue, he's dealing in vice. Right? But as he's going out, then his foot, knocks one of a stone that's loose in the floor out of place, so he stops and puts it back into place. So his whole purpose of being there is vice, not virtue. But he has just performed a meritorious act. You understand? Okay.
That's why rose to elves are filled with good intentions. And the opposite, you know, we say like the road to hell is paved with
good intentions. Yes, like that. Like that. So one always has to be careful. It's just like many times devotees are wanting to establish something, but they're actually using atheistic philosophy to establish it. And it's all right if they actually establish the correct conclusion. Just like Krishna, to establish the Govardhan Puja, he used Karma Mimamsa to defeat just Nanda Baba's concept of just basic karma, the duties of karma. But the conclusion was devotional service. So therefore, it's complete. But sometimes devotees will just quote these philosophies without knowing it, without actually bringing it to Krishna. They'll use the philosophies to show how Krishna's not involved. And therefore, then they don't have to themselves be involved. But all these processes will give you good material result because of piety, or will liberate you. That's the one thing about the Vedic, all these Vedic philosophies. You will either get to the heavenly planets, you know, enjoy here, get to the heavenly planets, or be liberated. Right? None of them, you know, technically speaking, on one level send you to hell. Only the Mayavadis, they exclusively get those rights.
Vice and virtue would therefore be more like the mentality.
Yeah. I mean, it can be the category of this, but it's what is the benefit you get from something? Because you're going to get mixes. Attachment, detachment, both are working. Just like if you want to work with attachment, you have to be slightly detached. You know, if you want to work with detachment, you have to be slightly attached. You know, so there's always going to be these mix. That's why they go together. It's just a matter of where it is, so. Yes? No?
Well, I'm still not very clear on what differentiates the pairs.
The pairs. Pairs means pairs compared to what? Apples, like, oranges.
Vice and virtue is one pair. Non-meritorious and meritorious is another pair. And it's not very clear in my mind what differentiates, let's say, pair number two from pair number three.
Point is, do you get any credit for it? Just like, let us say, you kill the animal according to sacrifice, according to the authorization of the Shastra. Now, you do not go to hell for that. You will not, there's no sin connected. Right? So, but at the same time is, you will suffer the reaction of killing the animal, which is you will then have to be in the position of the animal and be killed. But it's considered a meritorious act. Does that make sense? So you always have this mix. Getting that? Your vice, let's say, you're doing a meritorious act, but let's say you're doing it for selfish intent. So is that vice or virtue? He's giving in charity, but his whole purpose is to be recognized. Like I heard about one of our temples somewhere, I don't know where it was, but some man, he gave donation for the fans in the temple room. So every time he'd come to the temple, then he would insist that the pujaris announced to, you know, the other devotees who are visiting how he gave the fans. Okay, so one time they do that. But every time he came, he demanded that they say this. So they went up, took the fans down, and gave them back to them. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So like that. Thus, bondage and liberation are both concepts of the intellect. So because they're taking knowledge as being by how you liberate yourself, right? Here, the thing is, says liberation is simply based on knowledge. You know that you're not part of this world. You identify yourself as separate. Then you're liberated. You don't understand that you're in ignorance and you're bound. So they're taking are concepts of the intellect, right? Which technically they are. On this platform of liberation. In other words, the Swarupya Mukti, you're coming to that platform where you're out of the material world, not the spiritual world. It is intellectual. Because you're not actually liberated. Real liberation is prema. So this is, you're liberated means you're out of the material world. So you can say you're liberated, but you're not going to stay there. You're going to go back into the material world. So therefore, you have to then establish that you are... until you come to the point of developing love for Krishna, then you're eternally going to be in the spiritual world. Otherwise, just being between the spiritual and material world is not a permanent solution, situation. And so the jiva can't remain there. He has to go forward into prema, or he'll go back into conditioning. You can't remain in the neutral position. Right? Does that make sense? Through the practice of the yoga of discrimination, that is, the repeated affirmation of non-identification with the body, senses, or mind, such as, for instance, I am not the experiencer, I am not the doer, whatever is going on is in Prakriti. One polishes one's intellect and becomes more consciously aware of one's true nature. This type of knowledge or understanding leads one to the state of freedom from all confusions and false identifications. And thus one attains the knowledge of the true self. After the self realizes its true nature, all anxieties are dissolved. Then the self becomes disinterested in seeing Prakriti, and Prakriti becomes disinterested in showing herself, because she has seen and her purpose has been fulfilled. And Prakriti and Purusha are both infinite and all-pervading, and are therefore eternally together, like two sides of the same coin. But when their purpose is fulfilled, the process of manifestation ceases. Right? So we can see is now at this point, they're confusing, they can't tell the difference between the soul and the Supreme Soul. Right? So that's the problem with this, because they're trying to define this without God, basically. Then they have to, all these phenomena are going on, they're observable, right? They're mentioned in the Shastra. So then that means they have to, the self has to mean, self being Purusha has to mean both the Jiva and the Supreme Lord. Though all the other aspects of the Supreme Lord, they're leaving out. But the point is if the two of them match together, then what's the problem? Then it becomes, it's just their... it said there's a need, but then what is the need if you're already in that state? So then how much does that go on? Does he do it once? He does it twice? It's not, because they're talking about it's permanent once you get to that position. But then that's one living entity. Where's about the next one? So then, in other words, it all goes on. It's always going on, the material energy.
The Rabideya is niti-niti, that's same as the Mayavada.
Because it means these lower philosophies are all contained in the higher ones. Right? So whatever's in here is going to be in these higher philosophies.
So that is their main idea, it's not this, not that?
Is knowledge. Knowledge is the main thing. It's not just anything of the world, but yeah, it means you're basically going because you're not the senses, so that means you have to deal with each sense, you have to deal with each sense object that you're attracted to. So it is that process, because Shankya means to be able to enumerate, to be able to distinguish the difference. Yeah. In the Shankya philosophy, there are two kinds of liberation, Jivan Mukti and Videha Mukti. The liberation attained in one's lifetime is called Jivan Mukti. In this kind of liberation, a person continues his existence on this platform as a liberated being. He lives in this world and enjoys the worldly objects until he casts off his body. He continues his journey through worldly life just as a fan continues to revolve due to its previously generated speed. For a short while after it has been switched off, when all the samskaras, the impressions of past actions, are finished. When he casts off his body, he is said to enter into Videha Mukti, which is liberation after death. Right? So that means you can be Jivan Mukta in this life. So it's the same. We use the same process. So that's there. So that's why it mentioned before is that after the self realizes its true nature, all anxieties are dissolved. So that's Jivan Mukta. When the self becomes disinterested in seeing Prakriti, and Prakriti becomes disinterested in showing herself, because she has seen and her purpose is fulfilled, Prakriti and Purusha are both infinite and all-pervading, and therefore eternally together. So, in other words, then it comes to the point is then she no longer manifests, you know, because there's no forms and all, and he's not involved. So then that would be the Videha Mukti. Right? So one can be liberated in this lifetime by this process. Right? In other words, nice karma liberates you from material existence. So, in performance of nice karma, if that's being done based on bhakti, it's being done based on knowledge, it's being done just on being dutiful and nice, whatever it is, it still works the same way. It is the mechanics of liberation. But if it's not connected with bhakti, the liberation it will give will be temporary. Does that make sense? Right? And if it's not based on knowledge, most likely there'll be a lot of karma involved, so it will end up in just placing you higher within the heavenly regions. The more you are working on nice karma, the higher up in the planetary systems. The more you're just dealing with good behavior and that, the lower down you'll be in the system. Yes.
In the heavenly planets, is it possible to be elevated from there?
Generally not. Let us say you've worked all week and everything like that, you know, on the weekend you have a party, invite all your friends over, you're having a good time. Do you make money? When you're having a party, are you making more money? No, you just spend what money. So then after the weekend you go back to work. You understand? So generally people are too busy having a good time that's not an interest. That's why going to the heavenly planets is not, devotees don't see as an option for advancing a devotional service.
In Bhagavad Gita it's mentioned that all the sages are in the higher planetary.
Yeah, that's the sages. They're not with Indra sitting around with the nice apsaras down in the gardens there, you know, drinking their, you know, local somaras. They're above that, sitting, you know, in yoga asana in their kopans, you know, with nothing and doing meditation, either doing austerity or meditation. Or satyaloka yoga. You understand? So heavenly, when we say heavenly planets, we specifically mean, you know, Indra and his realms. There's 22 or 24 heavenly planets. So generally we're meaning those. Okay? Because the others, those are based on much higher. If you're performing your duties completely freed from all attachments, but you like doing, you're attached to doing the duties, that will make you into Prajapati, so you'll be Maharloka. But if you perform it, you know, tapasya or a meditation is your main things, that'll get you to Tapa or Janaloka. And if yoga is your main thing, that'll get you to Brahmaloka. Right? Like that. So those are, they're heavenly planets, but they're beyond, they're not within the realm of karma. Right? That means they're not driven by sex life. While Indra's planets are. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So they don't have social life and all that kind of stuff. You know, the other is that, you know, you go around your vehicles, you dress up, you cut your profile, you know, you do all that kind of stuff. These others is not. They discuss, you know, shastra. They perform their sadhana. That's their pleasure. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So does that change your plan? It's such an annoyance here. I'll go to the heavenly planets and perform my devotional sadhana there. Well, it doesn't work so good. Okay, the concept of God. The earliest available text of Nirishvara Shankya, the Shankya Karika, does not discuss the existence of God at all. Right? Because Nirishvara means there is no controller. The absence of any reference to God led the proponents of this system to conclude that the early Shankya philosophers did not accept the existence of God. They argued that because the entire universe is a system of cause and effect, it could not be caused by God, because by definition God is eternal and immutable. That which is unchanging cannot be the active cause of anything. So the ultimate cause of the universe is eternal but ever changing. That cause is Prakriti. The eternal and ever-changing unconscious material principle. In reply to this, one could argue that Prakriti is not intelligent and must therefore be controlled and directed by some intelligent principle in order to produce the universe. But because there are many Purushas, they cannot guide and lead the infinite, all-pervading Prakriti. So one must therefore conclude that there is a God. But this is not possible, the proponents of non-theistic Shankya reply, because the act of controlling or guiding Prakriti means to do something or to be active. In addition, if God controls Prakriti, then what inspires God to make her create a world full of pain and misery? Right? Same problems that, you know, keep up the, you know. Yeah, it means, you know, keep up anybody who's worrying about God and religion, right? Same point. So they've been talking about this for a long time. Moreover, one cannot say that God has desires because desire implies imperfection. Oof, boy, this is almost exactly the list of things that, I forget who it is, Kant or something, he comes up with these 4 points.
No, that's Epicurus.
Epicurus.
Yeah, it's this Greek philosopher, you know.
There's these 4 points, and it
God
through
is
the
omnipotent and omniscient, and then, you know, why does, you know, many people.
The interesting thing is they all accept God by his actual definition. You know, they're saying, well, if God's unlimited and eternal and this and that, he can't be doing this. So they're defining there is God, and they can conceive. But because it's different than this, therefore he can't be involved, then they'll say he doesn't exist. But they prove his non-existence based on his actual existence. You know what I'm saying? That's the part. Because they only understand the Brahman element. They don't know Paramatma. They don't know Bhagavan. Right? Yoga understands Paramatma. But it seems to be, in their concept, possibly just in it, you know, something either separate, like in Nyaya and Vaisheshika. Or it's, what do you call it? Or it's just an expansion of Brahman. Therefore, there is no such thing as God. Purusha is sufficient to inspire the unconscious Prakriti to manifest itself in the form of the universe. So saying the jivas are enough, right? So that way, then get rid of God, I can be God, right? Okay, there's a whole bunch of us, so whatever it is, but we get together, you know. We work together, we work it out. Later, a section of Shankya philosophers were persuaded to accept the existence of God. In debates with theistic opponents, they found it very difficult to explain the creation without including a supreme being in their system. One logical weakness of Nirishvara Shankya was that attacked by theists is the belief in many Purushas, but only one Prakriti. Was it one Purusha or all the Purushas together that inspired Prakriti to manifest? If only one, then creation occurred against the wish of the other Purushas. Why did the desire of only one soul implicate all others in birth and death? Right? I guess they never heard of Adam and Eve, right? If all the Purushas together inspired Prakriti to create, then there must be some communication and agreement among the Purushas. But there is no record of a cosmic conference of all the Purushas to make such a decision. See, even they don't have committees. Therefore, there must be one supreme being who guides Prakriti independently. Right? Also, then you'd have the problem is if they all had to get together to inspire it to, then how would, then that means that everybody would also have to be liberated for it to stop. But each individual can be bound and liberated, and everybody else can be doing whatever they're doing. So that means there has to be someone beyond the jivas who are controlling it.
So they're saying that when these arguments were put forward, them, they modified, and then there's a branch of Sankhya that became somewhat theist?
No, there is theistic. There is theistic Sankhya. That's what Kapila Muni says. Because the technical points that they're making are all correct. The problem is that their conclusion that Purusha means the jiva and that's end of discussion without a supreme controller who's actually controlling the material energy. Because otherwise, how does she act as that person? Why would she be doing that? You know, it's like she is dead matter. Why is it she takes on the mood of mother? Why? Because that would mean she's conscious, but she's taking on his, reflecting his mood of consciousness. Why mother? Why not wife? Why not daughter? Why not the, you know, the old lady with cats next door? You know, why that one? You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So it seems to be, how did it work out so nicely? Because true, she is like that. She is the mother, but how is that working out? You know? If you can say, okay, she gives birth to living entities, but still is dead matter. You know, so how is it just that reflected consciousness means then that she has to be manifesting the consciousness of the living entities? So it has to be the living entities that are being mother to themselves, just like they're not bound, it's the material energy that's actually is bound in itself, it's just being itself. So in the same way as then they're actually their own mother here. You know, so you know, so they're not bound or liberated, but they're also the one that's doing the whole thing. So then, but that's not anybody's consciousness.
And then the jivanist also, because Prakriti didn't give birth to the jivas didn't give birth to Prakriti.
Yeah, so where did they come from? So that's not even brought up as a discussion. Just these principles are eternal. So it's all correct, it's all true. But without accepting the Supreme Lord, it's not complete. And so it will not actually give you such a good result. Okay. So now, here we come. So, okay, so now then, tomorrow we'll start with yoga. Okay, a lot of the way through.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki Jai.